The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today's program I think is a program that you're really going to like. In fact, it may become your favorite edition of Intelligent Medicine because the message in it is very, very hopeful for those of us who are trying to optimize our weight, and sometimes there's a real prejudice against overweight people. We're fat phobic in America. And the book that we're going to talk about is entitled The Obesity Paradox: When Thinner Means Sicker and Heavier Means Healthier. Now, how can that be? Because so often we're told you can never be too young, too rich, or too thin, right? You've heard that over and over again. But today's guest, who's a leading cardiologist, has written innumerable papers, and he's presented something called The Obesity Paradox, and he's encapsulated it in this great new book, The Obesity Paradox. He's Carl Chip LaVie. We're going to refer to him by his nickname, Chip. He's a board-certified cardiologist at the John Oxner Heart and Vascular Institute in New Orleans. It's one of the most prestigious medical institutions in the country. And he's the author co-author of more than 800 journal articles, two medical textbooks. He's editor-in-chief of Progress in Cardiovascular Disease, and he's been featured all over the media. His work has been quoted in the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and many other media outlets. And so, without further ado, here's Dr. Chip LaVie. Chip, it's a pleasure having you on Intelligent Medicine.
And it's a pleasure to be here, Ron, and thanks so much for having me.
Well, first of all, define what you mean by the obesity paradox, because we tend to think, I mean, we hear so much about more and more Americans are overweight, and this is a huge problem, we're all going to die prematurely, and yet there's a paradox somehow here.
Yes, what the obesity paradox is that we know that being overweight or obese has adverse effects on many of our cardiovascular risk factors, things like it raises blood pressure, it worsens the blood fats, the lipid levels, it worsens glucose, it increases inflammation in the blood, things like C-reactive protein that is associated with worse cardiovascular risk generally. And we also know that overweight and obese have an increased risk of most of the cardiovascular diseases. That's true for hypertension, coronary heart disease, heart failure, atrial fibrillation, and many other cardiac disorders. But work that we've done for the past 10 to 15 years is repeatedly showing, and now others are showing this in very large meta-analyses, that when you look at cohorts of people with heart disease, like coronary heart disease, like heart failure, like hypertension, the overweight and obese are doing better, they're living longer as a group than are their lean counterparts with the same cardiovascular diseases, and sometimes 30 to 50% lower mortality rates. That's basically the obesity paradox in a nutshell from the cardiovascular standpoint, but the obesity paradox has also been shown in many other groups of patients with chronic diseases, like end-stage renal disease, patients on dialysis, rheumatoid arthritis, HIV disease, and even shown in elderly populations. So there's many groups of patients that have been studied where overweight and obese are actually living longer. And in a really gigantic study that was published last January 2013 in JAMA, which is one of the leading world's medical journals, was a paper by Catherine Flegel that got tremendous attention in the media and through in the medical journals. She did it from the CDC, she's from the CDC, the Center of Disease Control, and she did a meta-analysis of 97 studies of 2.9 million people. And in this large meta-analysis, which had over 270,000 deaths, so it was quite statistically powered, they showed that the best survival was with a body mass index, a BMI, in the 25 to 30 range, which is the BMI group that is actually associated or basically called overweight.
Right.
They had a better...
Because 25 is considered the cutoff. I mean, you have to check yourself out, and if you're over 25, it's time to lose weight, according to the pundits.
That's right. The normal BMI is 18.5 to right. 25, and the group who had the best survival in this huge study was between 25 and 30, and they had a 6% lower mortality than did the normal BMI. And actually, the mildly obese, the 30 to 35, had a 5% lower mortality than did the normal weight.
Wow.
Now, it wasn't quite statistically significant, but it was almost statistically significant. Now, the obese as a whole, if you looked at all the obese had higher mortality. But that's because the mortality was so high in the class 2 obesity, which is called BMI 35 to 40, or the class 3 obesity, which some people call morbid obesity. I think that morbid is kind of a mean word, but it's better to say class 3. But when you count all obese, the obese had higher mortality, but it's because of the high mortality in the moderate and severe obese, whereas you can't say now, based on this large volume of data, that the overweight and mildly obese are having worse survival. And this is the kind of thing that we talk about in my book in detail. I think that my colleagues and I have been involved in some groundbreaking research during the last 10 to 15 years that, no question, it's been controversial. And I have to admit, When I first started getting this data 13 years ago, it was surprising to me as a doctor, and in some ways I think has turned conventional wisdom on its head. But I think our research shows that we can no longer say what many people have thought and what doctors have often been saying for decades, that is that thinner is necessarily healthier.
Well, you know, this is very controversial, and you must be getting a lot of blowback from certain sectors of the cardiovascular community. And perhaps some people are accusing you, you know, you live down there in New Orleans. Maybe you're just trying to get prime reservations at some great New Orleans eateries by broadcasting this message.
Well, yes, Ron, we're definitely getting beat up a little bit. But you know, when we first started showing this work 13 years ago, honestly, it was trouble. We had trouble getting some of the papers published because some people thought this cannot possibly be
true. It's heresy. It's like heretical.
And I have to admit, the first time that I saw it in my own data, my very first thought was that we had switched the columns around. You know, how could the thinner people, how could those who had lower body fat percentages with heart failure, how could they be dying faster than the heavier people? And so my first thought was we had columns mixed up, and obviously we quickly checked that and found out that this was in fact the case. And now, 13 years later, it's been shown over and over in many of our studies, but many in other studies, and it's been shown in huge meta-analyses. You know, people have taken 40 papers of 250,000 patients with coronary heart disease or tons of studies of heart failure patients. And this theme has been shown over and over again. So I think now even many of the original doubters do recognize that there is a true obesity paradox. Now, the question is, they will ask, what is the cause of it?
And right. What's the suspected mechanism? Because you can find disparate facts sometimes and make a correlation, but there has to be some mechanistic explanation for why this should be true, correct?
That's true, and we don't have we have a bunch of possible mechanisms, but I would like to say from the beginning, I'm not trying to promote obesity. And I'm not trying to get normal weight people to gain weight. But the fact is that in our current society, about 75% of the population are either considered overweight or obese by body mass index criteria. Now, we can argue about how accurate is body mass index, because it assesses total weight. It doesn't divide the weight into the fat versus muscle.
Right, but by that criterion, all the superbly trained athletes, say, on the New Orleans Saints would be considered obese.
Correct. The middle linebackers in the NFL who may have no body fat may be, have BMIs in the low to mid-30s, and they would be considered obese, and yet they're solid muscle. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's no question in an adult population, most people who have a high BMI have a fair amount of fat. Yeah. And so for the large amount of our population who is now overweight or obese, and the obesity percentage is about 36% of the United States population. And so for many of those people, they have tried to lose weight and failed, or they've lost weight numerous times but gained it back, and they're still sitting 20, 30, or 40 pounds higher than what they would like to be or what the charts tell them that they should be. And what my book is trying to tell people is it's not doomsday for you, that you can still have a very good survival. In fact, I think in many ways the fat has been demonized by our society. And my book is pointing out that fat is not always the devil. And in fact, that our research shows that fitness is probably much more important than fatness with regard to long-term health outcomes.
Well, so say you have two identical-looking individuals or similar-looking individuals, both with a BMI of, say, 31, and one has hypertension, diabetes, sky-high cholesterol and triglycerides, and the other has perfectly great numbers. So they could look identical, have the same BMI. So there's a difference between a fit obese or fat person, chubby, pleasantly plump, whatever, you know, let's use a non-pejorative word, versus someone who's pathologically obese, correct?
That's true too. And you know, so first of all, if you just, as you said, you take two people who have the same exact body mass index, one of them may be fit and the other one may not be fit. And then that's, you know, so one thing is fitness. There's even another thing, since you've mentioned some of the metabolic parameters, there's also metabolically healthy. So probably the ideal, if the ideal for all of society would be for everyone to remain thin, to be fit, and to be metabolically healthy, not have an elevated glucose, have good lipids, have good blood pressure, have low levels of inflammation. Well, that's not what's happened to most people in our society who typically gain weight and lose fitness as they get older. And so our research is pointing out, and we really harp on this in the book, is that you can't look at a person and tell whether they're healthy. And so, for example, a lot of people would look at a thin person and think, well, they must be healthy. Well, a thin person who's got low muscle, who's physically inactive, and is not physically fit, they are actually worse off than a heavier person, and particularly worse off than a heavier person who's fit. Now, you might say, well, how can a really heavy person be fit? And it is true that you're more likely, as you gain weight, to lose fitness too. And so the heavier you get, you may become more physically inactive and may lead to either reductions in fitness. But there are a lot of people who are overweight or even mildly obese who are actually fitter than thin people.
Right. And there's actually a term that is employed sometimes. It's called, it's abbreviated TOFI, thin outside, fat inside. It's for the people who appear okay, but they're metabolically obese. And it seems to be particularly predominant in certain racial groups, like South Asians, for example. They seem relatively petite, normal weight, but they may be metabolically unfit with high insulin, high blood sugar, high glycohemoglobin, high CRP, and so on.
Absolutely. And a lot of times, very little muscle.
Yeah,
you know, and so you know, and obviously you go, okay, well, you know, when you gain a lot of weight, you mostly gain fat. But the fact is that when people gain weight, they do, you know, unless you're gaining weight while you're working out heavily. But when most people gain weight, they mostly gain fat, but they generally gain some muscle. And when you lose weight, you usually lose both fat and muscle unless you're working out hard. And so the fact is that heavier people tend to have more muscle than a lot of thin people do, particularly thin people who are not physically active and are not fit.
Is this a message that's particularly pertinent to the elderly population, people over 75 or so, because there's this whole element of frailty? And then we have, like, 86-year-old women who want to be ingenues. They're constantly on diets, and they're brittle and thin, and maybe they're less likely to survive than their slightly chubby counterparts. Or we like to use a word up here in the Northeast. I don't know if you're using it very much in New Orleans. It's called zaftig.
That's not one that we use down in Cajun land in the Big Easy, but it sounds like a great
pleasantly plump.
Yeah,
it's a New Yorkese Yiddish expression, which means a little, pleasantly plump in a good way.
And to hit on that again in the elderly population, certainly if young people want to lose weight, I'm not trying to get people not to lose weight. What I'm trying to emphasize is that one could be healthy at weights that much of society doesn't consider to be perfect, particularly if one gets their fitness level good. But still, people want to lose weight for various reasons. Sometimes they want to lose weight to allow them to be on less medications. They may want to lose weight so that they fit into a better, dress size or fit into a smaller suit. They may want to lose weight to improve their sport, or they may want to lose weight because they perceive that they will look better on the beach in their bathing suit. So there's lots of reasons to lose weight, but what I'm trying to say is that from a health standpoint, from survival, you can still have very good survival by just improving your fitness. And in fact, a thin, unfit person is way worse off than a heavier, fit person.
Well, this is actually sort of a heartening message, because there's so much unhappiness generated and so much futile activity generated around the drive to lose weight. Some of it beneficial, but some of it, frankly, kind of hopeless, because there's some people who metabolically, genetically, one way or another, they're not going to achieve their optimal BMI of less than 25. It's just not going to happen.
And there's actually very little evidence that weight loss, at least in the overweight and mildly obese categories, improves survival. I mean, there's certainly you can improve some of your glucose, your lipids. You sometimes lower your blood pressure and allow yourself to be on less medication. But and you may help your arthritis. You may increase your mobility. Maybe your knees and your hips and your backs could feel better. So there are other reasons that people like being thinner. But if you're looking at it from a survival standpoint, there's very little evidence that weight loss improves survival in overweight and mildly obese. And you brought up a point earlier about the elderly. It's one thing if young people want to lose weight, but unless an older person is extremely heavy, probably vigorous weight loss is not a healthy thing for older people to be doing. I mean, if they want to lose 5 or 10 pounds and to take some stress off of their joints, that could be okay. But very, very significant weight loss is generally not a healthy thing in the elderly. And in fact, the elderly data looks like they're a perfect population for the obesity paradox, in that the overweight and mildly obese elderly, in many studies, appear to have a better survival than do the thin elderly. And they have more reserve to fight certain illnesses.
Right. Right. When hardship or, an illness comes, they actually have something to fall back on. I've heard it said that part of the obesity paradox can be explained if instead of measuring weight or waist circumference, we were to measure body composition. And there are tools for doing this. There's electronic machines that do this. Even some home scales do this. And then there's also more sophisticated tools that can be performed, tests that can be performed in a hospital or a doctor's office to ascertain precisely what's your percentage of lean to fat. Can that help us discriminate between a healthy overweight person versus a person who really is pathologically overweight?
I think that clearly, if one could differentiate muscle and fat, no one is arguing that having more non-fat mass or lean mass, which is generally muscle mass or skeletal mass, no one is arguing that having more of non-fat mass is a good thing. The question comes in what is the role that the fat itself is playing? And depending on what exact population you look at, you will get different results. Like, for example, in my coronary disease population, we're seeing that higher percent body fat is correlated with a better survival, and the same thing we've shown in heart failure population. Whereas in more general populations, once you correct for the non-fat mass or the muscle mass, you're no longer seeing a favorable effect of fat. Now, I'm not sure that would be the case if we just evaluated the elderly population. I've actually had the privilege of seeing some unpublished research of showing that even higher subcutaneous fat, which generally is protective, but even higher visceral fat could be at least associated with protection in the elderly. Now, the thing is,
that's a surprising finding.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, the thing is, though, could that be? Could it may not be causal. You see, and that's the thing is, would it? It's hard to think of a mechanism by why you would
that
actually
could be protective,
gain
actually,
benefit
yeah.
from having more visceral mm-hmm, fat, mm-hmm. even in the 70-year-olds. But it may be that it's not that the visceral fat is actually causing better health. It may be that it's associated.
It's maybe a sign of prosperity and relatively good digestion, assimilation, and overall good appetite and relatively good health.
That's certainly a possibility. And there's a lot of things that we know that are not necessarily causal. I mean, and I'll give you an example. We knew years ago that people who reported that they, you know, ate more, you know, vitamin E supplements had better survival. And then we also knew that the women who reported that they were taking hormone replacement therapy yep. many years ago, they had better survival. Well, when then they did randomized studies where everything was equal, it looked like vitamin E wasn't so helpful. In fact, it may have even trended toward harm. And in general, that's been the same, even though there's still a lot of controversy on exactly with the hormone replacement therapy. But certainly, most of the studies have come out either neutral or harmful for hormone replacement therapy. So why then is that so much different than the retrospective studies 20 years ago? And that may be because the healthier people were the ones taking the vitamin E supplements or taking the hormone replacement therapy, and it wasn't that the vitamin E or hormone replacement therapy was causing their better survival. It was associated with the better survival. And some of that could be the case with the obesity paradox in elderly and some of the stuff with body composition. But I think that the important thing is that, you know, 10, 15 years ago, if I was sitting with two heart attack patients and one of them had a BMI that was perfect of 23, and the other one had a BMI in the mild obese range of 32. 13 years ago, I would have thought that the prognosis of the 23 BMI was much better than the prognosis of the 32 BMI. And I would have been more worried about my 32 BMI than the 23 BMI patient. Where now I know that it's actually the opposite of that. You know, from our data and actually tons of data that have been published in the coronary heart disease literature. And so, you know, from a standpoint of counseling overweight and obese patients in our practices, you know, I think our data shows that it's not doomsday for them at all, that they can have a very good prognosis, and particularly if they improve their metabolic health, and even more so if they get themselves out of the low fitness category. And we don't need them to be, you know, super athletic mm-hmm. fit. We just need them to get out of the low fitness category.
Okay, this is a good inflection point because we divide our podcasts into two parts. Let's stipulate this is part one of our discussion about the obesity paradox with Dr. Carl Chip LaVie. And when we return, we're going to talk about some other paradoxes. There's not just an obesity paradox. There's a cholesterol paradox. There's even an exercise paradox. And we're also going to talk about some other medical conditions, diseases, and states where thinner doesn't necessarily mean healthier. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.